for letting me the opportunity to speak here. I would like to talk about a somewhat little different subject from what we have heard during this week. Namely, this is holomorphic foliation. So holomorphic foliation has been studied a lot recently by more from the algebraic point of view, from the geometry point of view, by Brunella, McQuillan, and Mendes. There is a classification of this foliation up a birational classification, like the classification for surfaces. But today I would like to speak more about the dynamics of these foliations, which I think is not really well understood yet. So first, I will begin with the definition of what I would like to consider. I don't know if it is. So what is a holomorphic foliation? So I will consider only holomorphic foliation on complex surfaces by curves, so holomorphic curves. So the complex surfaces is locally bielomorphic to a ball in C2. And on a ball in C2, the foliation is given by a one form, a holomorphic one form, and one studies the curves where this form is vanishing. So here I have drawn one ball and the curves where the form is vanishing, and here I have drawn another example where you can see a singularity, and in these foliations on surfaces by curves, the singularity are isolated points, so there is only a finite number of singularities. I mean complex dimension too, and so the curves, so the integral curves of the foliation are Riemann surfaces which are immersed in this complex surface. Okay, so I will restrict myself on the really basic examples, which are surfaces which are algebraic surfaces. And on algebraic surfaces, you have many meromorphic one forms, and this gives a lot of examples. And so, in the classification of this foliation, there is, so it's like the classification for surfaces. So the black box is the exceptional foliation, and so we do not know anything about this foliation. For instance, on CP2, if you consider a meromorphic one form of this type where P and Q are polynomials, it defines the foliation on C2 which can be compactified to CP2, and when the degree of P and Q are greater than 2, the foliation is exceptional. So the classification of Brunella, Mendes, McQuillan does not say anything, and so for instance I will really think about these foliations now. It means, so the classification states that it is, so the classification, so you have some boxes, and you have so the foliation where the Kodaira dimension is minus infinity, 0, 1, and 2, and 2 we cannot say anything, we just say exceptional foliation. That's what I mean. Okay. So as I said, I would like to so to consider this foliation as dynamical systems, so I'm going to look at the holonomy map. Okay. So you consider two transversals to the foliation. I mean, local transversal. So a transverse disk to the foliation. So first of all, sorry, I consider a path parameterized by the unit interval. So this path is gamma here, and I suppose this path is contained in a leaf of the foliation. in an integral colorless solution. Sometimes they are called leaves. And so it begins at the point P and ends at the point Q. So then I consider two transversal disks at P and Q. And so I can define the holonomy map, which is a map from the first transversal to the second transversal. In fact, it's a gem of holomorphic map, which is defined in the following way. What you can do is that you can take a neighborhood of gamma of the path in its leaf, and you deform this neighborhood. So it is a holomorphic curve. You deform it, and because it is intersecting transversally PP at P, the deformation will still intersect TP at a point P prime, and also at a unique point Q prime from the second transversal. So then the map which maps P prime to Q prime is the holonomy map associated to the path gamma. Okay. So in fact, we really don't know lots of things about these dynamics. And we don't even know really simple questions, such as the main problem I would like to discuss today. So the problem is how you can describe the domain of definition of this holonomy map. It is not clear, so they are locally defined, but they can be really small, and it is not clear that we can have a control on this domain. So I would like to discuss this question today, and especially a conjecture that has been stated by Franck Loret, which concerns the holomorphic foliation of CP2. And so the conjecture states that if you take a foliation of CP2, you take two lines, and you take a gem of holonomy maps between these two lines. So then the conjecture says that this gem of holomorphic map from CP1 to CP1 is going to be a really special map. Namely, you will be able to extend this map analytically along almost any path in the first line, L1. So the conjecture, I will precise the conjecture now. So the conjecture is written here. I will precise it with a picture. So in fact, the Loret conjecture describes exactly how the singularity that you can obtain when you try to extend analytically the holonomy map. So I have drawn here the first line L1, the second line L2, which lies in CP2. The foliation is the curves, integral curves are drawn in green. So at the middle you see the path gamma. So what can happen? So the first kind of singularity you can see is that you try to deform the path gamma, and then you will arrive to a tangency point of the foliation with L1. And at this tangency point, it will not be a big deal here because the holonomy map will be extendable, but it is going to be singular. I mean, the derivative of this holonomy map is going to be zero. But so if you think that you get a tangency point on L2, then you will get an algebraic singularity for the holonomy continuation. So this is the first kind of singularities you can obtain. And the second type of singularities you can obtain is when the path gamma is going to tend to two separatrices of the foliation. So two integral curves that tend to a singular point of the foliation. So then, of course, you cannot extend the holonomy map at the point of the separatrices, the intersection of the separatrices with L1. But it is only one point. So it is just the kind of singularities we can control. Namely, the kind of maps we get have been studied a lot by Dulac in the last the 19th century. Okay. So in fact, I will directly give. So this conjecture is not true. even if it is, I think it is, if I stated it, if it is that I think it can be true, or some ideas of this conjecture can be true, but stated like that, it is not true. I will describe an example for you. So I will describe a really simple example. In fact, it's really simple. So I will describe, in the first part of the talk, I will describe a work in common with Gabriel Casamiglia Mendelevitt and Sidney Frankel. So what I am going to construct for you is a foliation on a complex surface, so on CP2, but I won't do it in CP2, I will do it on a complex surface. I will have two edge breakers on the complex surface, and in one of the edge breakers I will have a disk on which is defined a holonomy map with value in the second edge break curve. And this map will not be extendable analytically at any point of the boundary of the disk. So it is going to be really like we will have a boundary of extension for the holonomy map, which is really far away from this kind of map. So how I will... So first, I will consider a compact Riemann surface, S, and then I consider the complex surface that I've called X, which is obtained by considering the product of the universal covers of S and quotienting by the diagonal action of the pi 1 of the surface. So you see that you have the two vertical and horizontal foliations of this surface of the product, which is invariant by the diagonal action, and then you can consider these two vibration of X. So this vibration, the fibers are isomorphic to the universal cover of the surface, and the base of these two vibration is the compact Riemann surface A. But so there is this symmetry. We have two symmetric vibration. I would like to think of one of them as a foliation, and to think of the second one as a vibration. I will be more precise about what I want to say to about this difference later. So I have drawn a picture you can see here. So of course they are symmetric, but in this picture it is no more symmetric. You can see the vertical vibration F and the horizontal foliation, which is also called F, but with I don't know how to call these letters, which I have drawn in green here. Okay? So of course I have drawn the picture for S being a circle because I cannot draw with the surface. Okay, so in this surface there is a curve which is interesting, which is really why we consider this surface. This curve is the curve delta here, which is obtained by the quotient of the diagonal of the product on the product S tilde times S tilde. This curve is biholomorphic to S, and in fact it is intersecting every fiber, every leaf of the foliation in one point, and every fiber of the fibration in one point also. Okay? And as you see in the picture, if you consider a fiber of the fibration and a leaf of the foliation, you see that the intersection is an orbit of the pi 1. So the fact, which is really easy to see, is that if you consider the triple formed by the complex surface, the foliation and the vibration, you can compactify it to a triple of a compact complex surface X bar, a foliation, holomorphic foliation F bar, and a vibration by CP1, rational vibration. So in fact you will replace every disk of the original vibration by a CP1. So I will prove it just later. It's really easy to see that. But suppose we have that. So I will consider, so my example will be this complex surface with this foliation, F bar, and I will take, for L1, I will take a fiber of F bar, right? So a rational, a blue rational curve. And for L2, I will take the diagonal. And what you see is that you have the holonomy map, which is defined on a disk of L1, namely on the fiber of the original foliation, which is a disk, to delta, which is defined by just following the green foliation and going to the intersection point in with delta. And this map is, so it is defined on a disk of L1, is this is the universal cover of delta. If you think of it, if you go from a vertical disk fiber to delta, you see the universal cover. And so, of course, it is not possible to extend the universal cover on a disk in CP1 to any point of the boundary. So that's the example. And to prove this fact, what we do is only the following remark. We see that the universal cover of S, so maybe I had to say that it is a hyperbolic Riemann surface. So the universal cover of S is the upper half plane. And thus, if you take a diffeomorphism with the upper half plane, you will get a representation of S, of the pi 1 of S in PSL2R. So you will make act the pi 1 of S on the upper half plane. And this action can be is extendable to CP1. It's really classical. And I just say that to prove this fact. So of course, I mean, I just use the fact that when you have homography acting on the upper half plane, you can extend it to CP1. Yeah, exactly. That's it. So just I put for you the results that we get. In fact, we are able to make the same kind of example of foliation but for the complex surface being CP2, and for the two L1 and L2 being real lines, as was stated in Lorentz conjecture. And so the equation is given by this beautiful formula here. I mean, I find it beautiful, please. And you have the lines, you can really describe them. So L1 is a vertical line, any vertical line x times c with x different from 0, 1, and infinity. And L2 is a horizontal line y equals to 0. Sorry? No. This construction, what you get, it is a rational fibration over a compact Riemann surface of genus 3002, so it's not CP2, it's not birational. But you can do the same kind of construction when you start with S being CP1 minus 3 points, and then you do the same construction, and you compactify the X-bar. So the X-bar won't be compact. It will be a rational fibration over a finite tap Riemann surface, but not compact. And so you compactify it by adding three lines over 0, 1, and infinity. And then there is a game you get a birational, so you get a rational surface, and there is a game to find the formula. So just a few words about what was really the idea in this example. So the idea is that when you have a foliation of a complex surface, you have some sets which are called, so you can consider some sets which are compact invariant sets by the foliation and which are minimal for this property of being invariant. So these sets, we are going to study them later. So these sets are some kind of analogy with the Julia set for a rational map, or the limit set of a group. So we can also think of them as being where the dynamics is really complicated. And outside the exterior of these sets, generally there are some property of discontinuity. And in this example, what was really special is that in this domain of discontinuity, you could find rational algebraic curves. That was exactly the point that makes this example possible. So this decomposition of foliation into FATU components and Julia components has been made by Gis, Gomenmont, and Saludes. I think it would be an interesting question to try to classify this kind of example, which are really special. And also I would like to add at the end that we get an example, but if you just move the L2 curve, which is the curve which is contained in the discontinuity set of the foliation, then you have not a counterexample to the Franck Loret conjecture. So it is really possible, and I think it is true, that the Loret conjecture is true, for instance, for generic lines. And I will try to explain in the second part of the talk why I think it could be possible that this conjecture is true, or a formulation of this conjecture is true. So in fact, for the second part of this talk, I will speak about the holonomy maps that we obtain when we consider generic passes on the leaves. And the generic passes I will consider are given by the Brunian motion on the leaves. And this theory, this idea of studying the Brunian motion along the leaves of the foliation has been first appears in the work of Garnett in 83. So I will just explain a little bit how it goes. So you consider a foliation, F, and you take on the leaves, so on the tangent bundle to the foliation, you consider a metric, a Riemannian metric, let's say in this case, so a Hermitian metric. And then you consider a point P, and you consider the leaf passing through P that is denoted here LP. So it is the integral curve passing through P. It is a surface, Riemann surface, on which you have a metric. And so you can you can study the Brunian motion on this leaf starting at the point P. So in fact, this Brunian motion is given by, it's given by a measure on the set of all passes parameterized by 0 plus infinity with values in the leaf through P, which start at the point P, right? So you consider all the continuous passes that start at the point P in the leaf through P. So this is the space I have denoted gamma P. And on this space, there is a measure that tells you the probability that such a trajectory occurs, which is called the Wiener measure. So to construct the Wiener measure, I just recall quickly how we do, the general idea of how we do. So we start, we discretize the Brunian motion by taking an epsilon, which is really small, and I choose, we choose a direction in the unitary tangent bundle to P, and we choose it randomly with respect to the Lebesgue measure, and then we take the geodesic of length square root of epsilon in that direction. We arrive at a point gamma epsilon, and then we choose randomly direction in the unitary tangent bundle, and we iterate this procedure. And so we will get a family of passes like that, on which we have a measure, a probability measure, described by the fact we have chosen randomly and independently the unitary tangent vectors. And at the limit, when epsilon tends to zero, we get the Wiener measure. So this is a theorem of Wiener. And the limit trajectory looks like that. I don't know. It's really not... I was tired. I was like, you know. So, okay. So now I will state a theorem about... So just a few words. So I think it's a good idea to consider this Brunian motion along the leaves for holomorphic foliation by curves, because the Brunian motion on the Riemann surfaces is conformally invariant. It means that if you change the Hermitian metric, you will get another Brownian motion, but it will have a lot of common property with the initial one. So that was our motivation. And so I will describe a theorem we obtained with Victor Kleptin. It concerns so foliations. So I will forget a little bit the holomorphic foliation on surfaces, but really we have done this theorem for the study of this foliation complex surfaces, but in fact we'll take the more general theorem. So we consider a transversely conformal foliation. That means there is a transverse conformal structure which are invariant by all the holonomy maps on a compact Riemannian manifold. The leaves can be any dimension, and transversely we can have also any dimension. So for instance, any codimension, real codimension one foliation is transversely conformal, for instance. So, okay. So in particular, also all the foliation on by holomorphic foliation on complex surfaces. So the theorem states that there is a dichotomy, or you have a transversely invariant measure, which when you have also a transverse invariant conformal structure is really restrictive. Generally, it means that you have a transversely invariant metric, or you have a compact leaf, which is really restrictive also. So this is the first part of the dichotomy. And the second part states, it's a little bit long to state, but it states that you have a lot of contraction for generic holonomy maps. And also you have some property of equidistribution of the Brownian path. So the second part states that you have a finite number of minimal sets, of minimal compact invariant sets for the variation, M1, MR. And on each of these sets, you have probability measures. And if you consider a point and you let the Brownian motion go, then with probability 1, the Brownian motion is going to choose one of the minimal sets and is going to tend to it exponentially fast, and it's going to be distributed with the measure corresponding to this minimal set. And moreover, if you consider the holonomy map corresponding to the path from 0 to t, it is going to be defined independently of t on a fixed transverse space, and the image of this fixed space is going to be contracted exponentially fast with the time t. Okay, so the second point states that for a lot of these holonomy maps, you will be able to define them on the same space, and the image is going to be contracted exponentially. So that's the theorem. So it's really in the spirit of Loret conjectures, because the counterexample we obtained, I described before, for Loret conjecture, is an example where you have a disk where a holonomy map is a universal cover of a surface, and you have expansion at the boundary of the disk. You have a lot of expansion. And this theorem states that generically for holonomy maps, you cannot have expansion. You have the other property, which is contraction. The first point of the theorem, namely the equidistribution of the Brownian path, has been proved by also by Fornais and Siboney for the case of lamination by holomorphic curve in CP2 by a completely different method that use geometry of the harmonic currents, which is really beautiful method and completely different from this dynamical study of the foliation. Okay. So, for the end of my talk, I would like to describe somewhere, I would like to say some words about the proof of this theorem. So, So you take any point and you let the Brownian motion go on the leaf through this point. And then, even a point which is not on the minimal set. Uh-huh. Yeah. Exactly. So every Boolean path will choose one, will be attracted by one, and it's going exponential. That's what the theorem states. Okay. So a big part of the proof is to consider the Lyapunov exponent that we have already considered for the kind of dynamical system this week. So, okay, so if you have a Brunian path, so a path in a leaf, parameterized by a positive time, then you can look how infinitesimally the holonomy map contracts a transverse ball. And so you define the Lyapunov exponent corresponding to this Brunian path. Of course, sometimes the limit does not exist, but it is what I want to consider for a large set of paths. Okay, so this is really what we are going to consider for the proof of the theorem. And of course, we know that the Lyapunov exponents, the limit exists for almost every point with respect to some invariant measures. Of course, here the measures are not so I have not defined what the measures are. So this measure were introduced by Garnett and studied in her article in the 90s. So she called them harmonic measure, which is really different from the harmonic measure on the Julia set and the Monobo set, etc. It's really different nature of measure. So the definition is that this is a probability measure on the surface, for which the integral of the Laplacian of any function, so I consider just the Laplacian along the foliation, of any smooth function is zero. And in fact, Garnett introduced this measure, and she proved that these are the good measure to consider when you consider this Brunian motion along the leaf. Namely, you can define, using this harmonic measure, you can define measures on the space of all passes on the complex surface which are contained in the leaf and which are invariant by the shift. So then you can apply all the theory, the ergodic theory for a flow, a semi-flow, and you get, for instance, the following fact that I have written here. So you take mu, a harmonic ergodic measure, and so the fact states that there exists a real number, lambda of mu, which depends on mu, such that for mu almost every point p on the surface, and wp, so for the measure, so and for almost every Brunian path that starts from this point p, the Lyapunov exponent of this path has a limit and converges to lambda of mu. And also, we have the second point, which states that the path gamma, for generic path gamma, they are distributed with respect to mu. So this is, in fact, a corollary of Birkhoff theorems, whence you prove that this measure that constructed Garnett is ergodic. Okay. So I am going to deal with this Lyapunov exponent. And what is really surprising, or maybe if you consider the Lyapunov exponent of a harmonic measure for foliation, you have an analogous formula for it, which is analog of the formula we have seen, for instance, in Araceli Stoke or Roman Stoke. And this formula states that the Lyapunov exponent is expressed by the integral of the curvature of the normal bundle. And so it is really exactly the same proof that we do for the classical Lyapunov exponent. So this has important consequences, for instance, for the study of holomorphic foliation, because then you can express the Lyapunov exponent as in algebraic terms. For instance, I just give you an example of what I what is really easy to see then. So if you take, for instance, the foliation of CP2, and you look on the, you put on the leaves of the foliation the Poincaré metric. So suppose the leaves are hyperbolic Riemann surfaces, but this is not a big deal. So then the Lyapunov exponent of the foliation is given by a formula which depends only on the degree of the foliation. Okay? So this formula is really surprising for me, but for instance, for you see in this formula here that the Lyapunov exponent is going to be negative. So in fact, how do you obtain it? You just write that the Lyapunov exponent is the integral of the curvature of the normal bundle. But in the case of CP2, the normal bundle, you can compute it because it is O of, I think, D plus 2, where D is the degree of the foliation. This is the D plus 2 you see here. And then the 2 minus, D minus 1 is the OD minus 1 is the tangent bundle to the foliation. So you see that you get an expression of the Lyapunov exponent with the curvature of the normal bundle, and where it is expressed also the fact that you have used the Poincaré metric, which is a metric of the tangent bundle. So it was just an example. I will be more precise now on what is the curvature of the normal bundle. So I will define it. But just before, I would like to give the first main lemma of we have to prove the theorem. So the lemma is the following. No, sorry, maybe I will. So the lemma states that you take a foliation, you take a minimal compact invariant set of the foliation, and then or on this minimal you have a transversal invariant measure, which is really restrictive, or there exists a harmonic measure supported on the minimal for which the Lyapunov exponent is negative. I forgot to say something which is a little bit strange. At the beginning, with Victor, we were a little bit so you see there is no foliation, for instance, for which you have an effect, generic effect of dilatation. And a priori it is strange, but if you think, for instance, you can think of so this property that you have contraction in general, you can think to a really basic example which is good to have in mind. You take, for instance, diffeomorphism of the circle which an attracting point and a repelling point, and then you consider the random dynamical system for which you iterate the diffeomorphism with probability 1/2, and then you iterate the inverse of the diffeomorphism with probability 1/2. And what you see is that if you iterate the diffeomorphism. So if you iterate the power of the diffeomorphism, then it is going to be contracted at a certain point, right? Because most of the points are going to tend to the attracting point. So let's say you have a diffeomorphism of the circle like that. And if you consider the powers of the diffeomorphism, it is going to be attracting. But if you consider the power of the inverse of the diffeomorphism, it is also going to be attractive to the other point. Okay? So in this example, because the symmetry of the probabilities, you can show that you have this property. It's just a little remark to say that there is no contradiction because here the Brillouin motion is symmetric. Okay, so I'm going to give an idea of the proof of this lemma. So first I have to define what means the curvature of the normal bundle. So I take So of course I have to take, I consider the normal bundle to the foliation, and I consider a Hermitian metric. on this bundle. And so what I can consider is the function phi, which is the infinitesimal distance between nibs. Using the transverse metric. So I have a transverse metric. I can measure how infinitesimally how the leaves are contracted or dilated. And I get a function. This function is well defined up to a function which is constant along the leaves. So it is, you have to think of it as a function on the leaves which is well defined up to a multiplicative constant. Okay. And now, so the curvature of the metric is going to be the Laplacian. It is a definition. It is the Laplacian of the logarithm of phi. Because phi is well defined up to a function, a constant, multiplicative constant, this function is well defined everywhere. Okay? So this is the definition. And I have said that you have, so you have the formula for the Lyapunov exponent that says that the Lyapunov exponent of a harmonic measure is the integral of the curvature of the normal bundle for any metric over x. Okay? So you have this formula. So now I will give an idea of the proof of the contraction property, namely I will try to prove that the Lyapunov exponent is negative. So how I will do that? So I will give I will first give a principle which states the following. Suppose you have a metric on the normal bundle for which the curvature is everywhere non-negative. Then I say that this metric is invariant by the foliation. It defines a transverse invariant metric. How to prove this? It is really simple. And So to prove this, we suppose we have a transverse metric for which the curvature is everywhere non-negative. And what I am going to do, I am going to consider a vector field along the leaves of the foliation defined by the following formula. X, this is a vector field. It is defined by the gradient of log, so the gradient along the leaves of the foliation of log phi. This is also well defined because phi is well defined up to a constant, multiplicative constant. So you see that if you compute the divergence of the vector field along the leaves, okay, what you get is that you get exactly the divergence of the gradient, which is the Laplacian of the logarithm of phi, and this is supposed to be positive. That means that the vector field dilates the volume on the leaves. On the other hand, by definition, you see that because it is a gradient of the transverse distance between the leaves, you see that x dilates also the transverse volume. Okay? So the only possibility is that it keeps the volume fixed and also it keeps the transverse distance invariant. So that, in fact, this vector field has to vanish everywhere, and the transverse metric is invariant. Okay, so it is really simple proof. And so, to prove the lemma, the strategy is to use a principle of an argument that has been found that I found in Sullivan's paper on foliated cycles. And so this argument, a corollary of this argument, says the following. So if you suppose that for any harmonic measure, the Lyapunov exponent is non-negative, then you can find a sequence of metric on the normal bundle for which uniformly the curvature is going to be non-negative at infinity. So if you consider, this means that for the limit inf of the curvature is uniformly going to be non-negative. Okay? So you consider this family of metrics. I don't want to enter into the proof of this argument, but it is really based on the principle of Sullivan and Banach's theorem. And if you have this, what you do is that you take this family, this sequence of metrics, and you are going to make them converge to a transverse measure at infinity, and because at infinity the curvature is going to be non-negative, you can try to use this principle and to prove that the transverse measure you get at the limit is invariant. So that's the strategy of the first part of the proof, which is this contraction lemma. Okay. I think I am done. So I will just say a few words about the continuation of this. So we have proved that if you have no transverse invariant measure, you have infinitesimal contraction. So then the next step is to use classical distortion argument to really prove that with positive probability, at least, you will be able to generically, the random invariant maps generically are going to really contract exponentially from transverse spaces. So we'll get that with positive probability. And then we have to study the Brownian motions on different leaves and to prove that they are similar properties. And so this is because we know that the leaves are converging in lots of directions exponentially, so we can try to prove that the Brownian motion on these leaves are similar. And thus we gain the theorem. So I think I will stop.